You're listening to Thrive, your agency resource, the only podcast of its kind for creative, media, and technology leaders who are ready to dive deeper into consciousness, leadership, and agency growth. I'm your host, Kelly Campbell. This year, Thrive is brought to you by E2M Solutions, a trusted white label partner to hundreds of digital agencies across the globe. Visit e2msolutions.com/thrive today. So I hope you all enjoyed our last slightly esoteric episode with Brad Williams. I know I did. I could talk about how astrology and grounded leadership relate to one another all day long. But today we are actually talking about the power of marketing in influencing decision makers, which means that the messaging must be inclusive. Today, I'm joined by Lola Bakary, founder of BCO, with over 15 years of experience as a CMO advisor and inclusive marketing strategist. I can tell you from personal experience, she is pure magic, and so is her new book, Responsible Marketing, How to Create an Authentic and Inclusive Marketing Strategy. Lola, thank you so much for sharing some time with me, my friend. It's so good to see you.
It's always good to see you, Kelly. Thank you so much for having me.
So you say that responsible marketing is meaningful brand activism through authentic advocacy. Obviously, all of that is in an effort to drive the bottom line. That's what brands care about. But what's beyond that?
What's beyond the bottom line? I love the way you frame the question today, Kelly, especially because right now I think we're seeing so many brands. And the one that's most top of mind for me, because I just wrote about it on LinkedIn today again, is what we saw happen with Bud Light and the influencer Dylan Mulvaney. And that example is to me such a, I won't even call it a microcosm, I'll call it a macrocosm of what it means to do more than just focus on the bottom line, but how also when you do so, your efforts are more successful at that level as well. So it's not just about the thing that you're doing in the moment, but what marketing leaders and especially agency leaders need to really think about is how are their activities affecting the intended beneficiaries of responsible marketing work, whether it's a historically excluded group or a cultural environmental cause? How do those effects last beyond just the timeframe of the marketing work itself? That's the sort of what's beyond. It's sort of like, what's the long-term impact of what it is that you're doing? And if you can create something that has that regenerative effect for the intended beneficiaries of the work, then you're much more likely to be seen as not in that sort of bucket of the performative activities that no one wants to be seen in. So I talk about it in terms of reaching for more. A longer definition that I've been sharing with audiences and on LinkedIn, you know, whether it's through speaking events or just doing all of the many, many posts, as you know, that I like to do on this topic, I challenge people to think of it in terms of this. And I'm going to read out sort of like the literal textbook definition that I'm using of responsible marketing and that will debut in the book. It's the practice of reaching for more by ambitiously addressing systemic inequities in ways that simultaneously deliver outsized business results. So that's another way to look at it. And I'll pause there to get your thoughts. But the beyond is about how are we putting these two goals together? It's never just about delivering outsized business results. And it's never just about ambitiously addressing systemic inequities.
Yeah.
Those two things are great things to do, but responsible marketing is when we bring them together.
Yeah.
We address these inequities and we choicefully and intentionally do that in a way to drive business results, because as you said, that's what marketers are responsible for.
Right. And I almost hear, like, in you saying it's not just A and it's not just B, it's sort of like the third entity that gets created between those things. I almost think that there's something even more outside of that. Like, I think about it, I don't know, we had this esoteric episode last time. So I'm thinking about like energetic fields, right? It's almost like the ripple effect or like the energy that's created around when you have this intention. You know, you're talking about cultural shift and you're talking about the bottom line. You're talking about conscious leadership. And we know that that ripples outward, right? Very, very clearly. and the
and beyond, it's
the brands are
it's funny you mentioned that word conscious, because that was one of the contenders for title. I was toying with a few different terms, whether it's just inclusive marketing, and I'll talk about why I didn't lean that way, but conscious marketing was top two contender for me. And the reason why we chose responsible, you know, we can talk about that, but it's almost like a click up from just those disciplines of specifically focusing on even a more small area of impact. So inclusivity is a particular area that responsible marketing wants to create, but it's also social impact. Mm-hmm. It's not just that we want it to be inclusive. We want it to actually do something that solves problems.
Right.
So in bringing together a few of the sort of ways that people talk about marketing that is more conscious, we, again, like you said, create this bigger, not just vision, but realization of our opportunity as marketers to do our work in ways that make the world better. And what could be more important to our long-term success as brands and as humans than that, right? Because if we're not here, or if we're not safe, then we can't do any work at all.
That's really well said. It almost makes me think of, there's an example, what I think of when I hear responsible marketing, there's an example of a brand new category. Very few people, maybe just a handful, are getting into what's called trauma-informed marketing, which I find fascinating, but really, you know, so necessary right now. Something as simple as Mother's Day, right? Yes. Mother's Day marketing. Not everyone has a great relationship with that day or with their mother. And so making sure that you allow people to opt out if they don't want to receive things around Mother's Day campaigns, like, that's trauma-informed marketing, and kind of gets into this really interesting area that I think is going to flourish as years go on.
Absolutely. Because when you say that, Kelly, you know what I think about, and I talk about this a lot in the book and just general, is like context. So I've been talking about it in terms of cultural context, but I'm really inspired by hearing, and I've always been inspired by hearing you talk about the importance of different sorts of work being trauma informed. But when we look at marketing in particular, well, what does it look like you said, to think through the full context of who might be the most underserved or ignored or excluded segments of an audience that is receiving a particular message. And in this case, like you talked about with Mother's Day, it's people who don't maybe have that same, you know, the sort of Norman Rockwell type of experience when it comes to either mothering or being mother themselves. Mm-hmm. And so how do we take our action as a brand and make sure that the impact of that positively influences those people in some way that's measurable, meaningful, and lasts over a longer time horizon than just the campaign itself?
Yeah. Something that I'm kind of curious about is, I mean, I know you work with CMOs, you're advising, you're doing inclusive strategy all the time. What do you see happening, like, in real time with those CMOs, those strategists, those marketers in the agency world who are not exactly, let's say, getting on board with the inclusivity train? What do you see? Well, yeah, I'm just curious, like, you're really on the front lines of, like, how that's impacting the brand, how that is being talked about at those agencies or at those internally at those brands. So yeah, just curious a little bit about that.
Like so many things when it comes to activism, when it comes to what's the effort to change the status quo, the biggest thing I'm seeing at that level is this desire to sort of talk in circles and talk our way out of believing that this is an important priority, not just a thing that we might do. It's the struggle between the sort of masses within an internal brand organization or agency and the few people who see the truth, which is that this is not just an option, this is an imperative,
right?
Because of so many reasons. But the number one being that our consumers, the people that we are trying to influence it, as marketers, as advertising agency executives, et cetera, as creatives, are demanding that we pay attention. And so I think there's a desire to create other narratives that allow folks to feel comfortable in a place of status quo. Mm-hmm. And that's the push and pull that's happening right now. You see the brands that are past that moment stand out, and they're acting on this in so many ways that are, the other thing we'll talk about is brand relevant. So they're not just choosing historically excluded group or a cultural cause or an environmental cause that's popular with their consumers and saying, all right, well, we've got to figure out a way to get involved. They're thinking of it in terms of how is that context of what our brand is already kind of involved in, or maybe even creating difficulties in, that we can either fix or we can either elevate, or, you know, sort of like, where do we really have a right to play? And let's play there through the lens of making life better for historically excluded groups. Those are obvious, but the folks who are still kind of trying to convince themselves that they either should or shouldn't or have to or don't have to are spinning their wheels a little bit. And there are a lot of committees and there are a lot of conversations and there are a lot of advisors being brought on, but from a standpoint of saying, oh, well, we're not sure what we're doing yet, but we have this committee of all these great people of all these different colors and backgrounds that are helping us, and we're elevating them, but nothing ever in terms of what's actually going to happen gets talked about. So I see a lot of wheel spinning. I see a lot of good intent, but I don't see as much commitment to action as I think would behoove, honestly, even shareholders, if we talk about it that way.
Hey, let's take a quick break. Did you know that there's a better way to scale your agency? Whether it's web design, development, e-commerce, content, SEO, or even hosting, E2M is the reliable white label partner you wish you knew about years ago. Personally, I'm proud to partner with E2M because of our alignment in values and ethics. Head over to e2msolutions.com/thrive to learn more. Now, let's get back to the show.
That's really interesting. I mean, there's like six different places I want to go in this conversation. One of the things that I'm seeing with like smaller agencies, maybe not the McCann-owned agencies and things like that, the smaller ones are like, oh, well, the work that we do isn't what Bud Light is doing, right? Like it's not on that kind of stage. So we can almost like afford to be a little bit more conservative and not really push into this and lean into this.
And the answer is sure, you can, but you're going to be leaving money on the table. And the other way to put that, like if anyone's listening and saying, well, is it really always about money? I could also be saying you're going to be leaving service on the table. Mm-hmm. You're going to be leaving advocacy on the table. Like those are the same things. Yeah. You're leaving it all on the table. And the one thing we know for businesses of any size, even solopreneurs like myself, I'm working with a group of great contractors and vendors, but it's mostly me. Even at this size, the decisions that I make have so much influence on my future success. And the one thing that I can't afford not to embrace is evolution, is change, is even with you, Kelly, coming into a collective of other conscious leaders to, you know, be part of something bigger than myself. That was a decision to do something differently. So no matter how small a scale you are as an agency, thinking about this, it almost becomes more of an imperative to make sure you're not letting that your size hold you back from evolving to the next step of where you should be.
And, you know, honestly, like being bolder and doing the right thing, which is really what we're talking about here, that can actually help you stand out and help you grow in ways that aren't necessarily operations related, right? So I think
absolutely,
really getting on board with this.
Look at an agency. There's two agencies I mentioned that I've been really impressed by the way that they're approaching their work. I won't even call it this work, because that's another reason why I chose the term responsible marketing. It's not some different thing. It's just the way I think that we should all be thinking about how we do marketing.
100%.
Right? Like, do you want to be irresponsible to folks who have experienced trauma, to historically excluded groups, to those who need your help and advocacy? No, you want to be responsible to them. And you see agencies like Mischief is one that I think is doing this in really, really interesting, creative ways, like you said, that are helping to very quickly raise a small and newer agency's profile. Now, that's, if you talk about small agencies, they're probably one of the higher profile small agencies. But even if you look at Palette Group, I don't know if you're familiar with Palette Group.
I'm not.
So run by my friend, Nate Nichols, who longtime advertising, well, not even advertising exec. He's a longtime creative who created his own firm called Palette Group 2. It's not even just about serving, and this term is old and we're retiring it, but multicultural audiences, but it's doing culture informed work for big brands and doing it in a way that is rigorously and unapologetically both inclusive and social impact oriented. Yep. That it's almost like his clients have to show that they're authentic to even get to work with him. So it becomes this thing of like, oh, I want to get in and I want to be able to benefit from the sort of cultural authenticity that a group like Palette Group can absolutely offer me because that's what they're focused on. Another one is Worthy through Miles Worthington, who left Netflix last year and then created his own agency. And you're just seeing so much success with what groups like that are doing because they've put a firm stake in the ground. There are no options. There are no sort of, oh, well, if the client doesn't quite want to go there, we won't go there. It's sort of like, if you come through our doors,
you know,
you've committed to going there. One of Nate's clients is NASCAR. Everybody is buying into this and understands that it's imperative.
I want to pivot for a minute and talk a little bit about your experience in writing this book. We're definitely in the same corner going through that process of like finishing the manuscript and all of that. But what has that process been like for you in surfacing some of these things and maybe kind of like encountering, I don't know, just different ways of thinking, the research, all of that? What has it been like?
If I had to choose one word, I would say iterative. So a lot of us love to have control. We love to go into a project and it's almost like this Gantt chart of activities and dates, and you have a clear understanding of how it's going to work. What I learned from day one is that especially for your first book, and especially if it's a business book, you're going to be building that plane as you're flying it. And the sort of makeup of the plane, the like engineering of the plane will change as you go along with every single conversation. Yep. So the number one thing I wanted to commit to up front was that in my book, I wanted to have more voices beyond cisgender white men, more voices of true diverse scope than any other marketing book had had. The sad thing is that was all too easy to do because if you look at the mainstream marketing books that everybody pays attention to, not only are very few even written by women, the sources inside them are largely white male. So my first decision was to do a large number. And I think I'm around like in the high 40s. By the time I'm done, I'll be around 60. Really fully sort of robust and rich interview conversations with people doing this work at the top. So a ton of CMOs, but also people supporting from the agency side. So I interviewed J.P. Petty, who's one of the head creatives at Wieden & Kennedy and really understands the cultural lens of things. Like, talking to them and getting their experience, their frontline experience and perspectives and understandings of the possibilities of this work, that has been critical to shape what the work even becomes.
Yeah.
But with that comes the challenge of synthesizing all this information and trying to find the balance between telling everyone's story and telling the story that Lola has set out to tell.
Yeah.
So frankly and candidly, that's been probably the biggest challenge. It's sort of like finding the me in the book and finding the right balance between all the voices I've sort of collected to both create a sense of richness in storytelling and even credibility, but also like really feeling confident enough to lean into the fact that my perspective, my opinion, the way I see it, is just as valid. And, you know, for those of us who aren't always validated in society, that can be a big challenge. It can be this place where you almost want to overly lean on the, well, such and such said, and then such and such said, and then such and such said. And that my editors are great at reminding me of this all the time. The real value is in, okay, understanding all this, here's what I'm saying, and finding that intersection is how I know a chapter is going into that magical place of like, this is it. And you know, Kelly, as someone who's writing, when that moment happens, it's like, yes.
Yes.
But you can never predict when it's going to happen. You just have to keep being in it.
Yeah. The iterative, I think the big takeaway of the iteration is spot on. Absolutely spot on. And same thing. I mean, we share that in common as well. Editors just saying like your voice is the thing that people want to hear. Right. So I'm really excited to read this once it comes out. And that's going to be available sometime before the end of this year.
Sometime before the end of the calendar year. Yeah. We were originally shooting for midsummer, but there was just so much more work I wanted to do to make it what I want it to be.
Yeah.
And so luckily when you have the partnership of a great publisher like I do, they're amenable to that. And as soon as we know the new date, it'll be shared with the world on LinkedIn and everywhere else. But if folks want to follow along, the journey, LinkedIn is the place to kind of keep tabs on everything I'm doing and thinking and feeling and emoting about.
All right. My last question for you, I'm going to give you a little mic drop moment. What do you tell marketers, CMOs, strategists? I'm just using marketers as the umbrella. What do you tell marketers who have influence and truly want to do better with the brands, mm-hmm. but are being met with resistance from leadership?
And this is the question. I'm so glad it's come up. It comes up all the time. And there's a few things that I recommend they do. It is at the highest level, first of all, internally, to think about that challenge as an honor. So you've been bestowed with the power to shape how people see and experience the world. If you are in charge of or contributing to the leadership of a marketing budget at any size, mm-hmm. how this business is going to market and how it engages with its audiences, those are messages that surround people more than any other messages. You have more power than the people who lead all the major news organizations, if we really think about it,
yeah.
to surround people with messages. So the challenge to them, I'll say the word morally, sort of morally, that hopefully gets them excited is, well, what are you going to do with that power? And how do you ensure you're not perceiving it as a burden, but that you're perceiving it the way that it really should be perceived, which is an honor and an opportunity. So once you've taken that on, and like you said, a lot of the ones who are sort of just looking to figure out how they're going to navigate internal politics and conversations are already there. Well, then you think about this as something that isn't a third thing. And when I say that, I mean, you're shooting to it sort of integrate responsible marketing principles within your existing plans. You're not going to your leadership and saying, okay, well, we really need to have like a responsible marketing strategy and asking for extra budget and, you know, saying this is sort of a work stream that we need to do additionally. It's more, here are all the things we want to accomplish in the next calendar year. How can we look at them bit by bit and ask ourselves, where are the most relevant points that we can make a meaningful and measurable social impact to a historically excluded group or cultural cause or environmental cause that is rooted in some sort of very clear alignment to our brand's truth? And when you think about it that way, it becomes more of a refinement exercise and an evolution exercise of the existing work than something that could easily be said no to because it's just another, it's a third, fourth, fifth, sixth thing. So making sure that folks see you're not trying to start anything net new, you're trying to refine and optimize, right? Bud Light's a good example of that. Mm-hmm. We have these influencer engagements that we do. Well, we send influencers product to celebrate their milestones. Okay, great. We want to expand the pie of people who get that honor of being celebrated by Bud Light. And the nice thing is when we celebrate them, they celebrate us. Awesome. So let's start to include transgender creators in that. That's a great strategy. It's a starting point. It's not anything that big, right? But you can't do that if you don't commit to your decision to do it. You can't do that if you're always thinking about, well, what exactly is going to be the transactional effect of that decision? So it's helping people see that this is no different than any other commitment we make. We're never just measuring the piece by piece activities that lead up to a strategic approach to doing a bigger thing. We're measuring the outcome as a whole over a long time horizon. And if we start to see responsible marketing initiatives and activities as things that need to prove themselves more quickly and more robustly than everything else, then we're setting ourselves up for failure. It's what I end up saying most is it's just like everything else. Well, how should I measure that? Just like you measure everything else. Well, how do I know I should take that risk? Just like the way you consider which risk you can take, you should take with everything else. And it's that normalizing of the opportunity that I think gets people to a place where someone like Raja, the CMO of MasterCard, can not just advocate for the transgender community, but actually create a product feature. And I'm talking about True Name, where people aren't constantly having to go around with their dead names on their credit cards and being outed at the point of sale and potentially suffering danger. That's actually something that they institutionally in the credit card industry fixed by making a decision,
yeah.
by focusing on the context of what the community they intended to engage with goes through. I mean, that's a lot of answer, but if I had to shorten it into one sentence, it's think about this as power that you have to wield and wield it in a way that makes everyone else in the organization see that you're solving the same business problems that they care about, because you are.
Well, if that's not a mic drop, I don't know what is. Lola, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you coming on, and good luck with the book. We're going to update the show notes and follow along when it comes out. And thank you again, my friend. I appreciate it.
It's always an honor to be in your energy, and I can't wait to take in all these other interviews that you've been, especially the one about astrology. I'm like, ooh, I'm intrigued. So this is great. You bring a lot of light into the world, Kelly, I hope, as you know, and I feel really lucky to be one of the beneficiaries of that light.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. If you liked this episode, please rate the show or subscribe wherever you watch or listen. And a big thank you to the official sponsor of Thrive for this year, E2M Solutions, your white label agency partner. Learn more about their approach, services, and subscription plans at e2msolutions.com/thrive.